Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Despite her 5'2", 130-pound frame, Jen Welter always excelled in athletics, from tennis to rugby to women's football. She credits her determination for helping her crack one of America's most stubborn glass ceilings. In 2015, Welter became the first female coach in the National Football League, working with the Arizona Cardinals linebackers in the preseason. As Welter writes in her new memoir, Play Big, it took years of adversity in life and sports before Welter found herself on the sidelines. And now she hopes her story can inspire others. Jen Welter, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I was curious where your competitive nature came from.
You know, I think a lot of it comes from my dad. You know, he's a war hero. He has a Silver Star and 2 Bronze Stars. And so a lot of my early stories I remember from my dad were about just bravery and the military and how you look out for others and how, you know, you work hard and nobody's going to give you anything. And he was always kind of like a hero in the jungle. And on the other side, you know, my mom would probably tell you that this innate motor of mine, right, has been there since I was a baby. My mom would say, you know, there was this point when she had to, she was going in for like a minor surgery and I was just a tiny baby and she was really afraid to leave me alone because my sister had breastfed for a long time and wouldn't take a bottle. And so she was very hesitant to give me a bottle. And then she said, once she did, my life was never the same because I just would not sit still. She was like, it was like you just loved it. It was the greatest thing in the world because you could eat and run. And from that moment on, she would tell you I was a baby on the move.
One thing you write about a lot in the book is that in sports, a lot of the opportunities that you had weren't necessarily in existence when you were growing up. I mean, it was hard to fathom a lot of the places you went and a lot of the leagues you played in and so forth. So when you were, let's say, in high school, what did you think your future in athletics would be?
You know, when I was in high school, in junior and senior year, I was a great soccer player. You know, I used to wear the number 13 as the sweeper because I said it was bad luck for them, right, because they had to deal with me.
Right.
And I don't know why, but I didn't really understand that, you know, it wasn't like some coach was going to mysteriously find me and know I was this amazing soccer player and like a genie waves a magic wand and you get to go play soccer in college. And so I really thought that I would probably play soccer in college and then that didn't happen. And so I ended up choosing to go to business school at Boston College and kind of putting my desire to play soccer to the back burner. And then I found this sport that I didn't even know existed, which was rugby, and immediately dove right in.
What was it that you liked about it?
It was football without the pads. It was, you know, it was football and soccer combined. So two sports that I had really loved. And this one, girls were allowed to play, you know, because football, it really wasn't. So it was the closest thing I had ever gotten to football. And as soon as I got my first taste of a tackle, that was pretty much it. I was done for.
Not too long after that, you ended up trying out for women's professional football. And if I was reading your book correctly, I mean, you were a little surprised that you made the team, right?
Well, I think with any of us, if we've been told or set a pattern in our life, you know, you kind of get used to getting turned down, or at least you fear it, right? And throughout my athletic career, though I was really good, I was always very undersized, you know, and when I was a tennis player, I was told that I'd never be pro because of my size and my build. And then as a rugby player, I got recruited for the under 23 national team, and then they told me I was too small. So stepping onto the football field, it was like, oh my gosh, here's this game that I have loved my whole life. And what if they tell me yet again that I'm too little. And so I struggled with it. Like, I think that we all do at times in our lives when we're stepping up into something or going to go for something that's so great, we fear rejection. And I certainly did, just like anybody else. And that fear could have kept me from trying out. Thankfully, the one thing that I told myself was I could live with being too small. I had been too small my entire life. But what I couldn't live with was wondering for the rest of my life what would have happened if I would have just tried out for that football team. And thankfully, that fear of always wondering motivated me enough to give it a try.
Well, we should say for our listeners who might be picturing a life of luxury in professional football that your check, your profit-sharing check after winning a title was for $12, and a lot of the time you spent as a professional was trying to hustle just to make the games happen, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's the truth of women's football still to this day. The women playing are the pioneers in the game. You know, I could say we were a league of their own, like the classic baseball movie, but a league of their own seemed to be much better funded than we were. And it was just this love and this passion and this belief that we could play. I never once in my entire women's football career cashed a check for playing football. So it wasn't about that. And yet at the same time, the first check that I got was so valuable that I never cashed it. I kept it as a reminder of what we were doing and what we were all playing for, because that was a significant moment. It was the first time I'd ever been paid to play football. And so I always remember those things and try and keep them close, because you have to find value in your life by the standards that you set, right? I used to be afraid to tell little kids when I would go talk in schools, because, you know, I could show them that I was a 4-time Super Bowl champion, and then they'd be like, oh my gosh, you know, if, you know, Tom Brady before he won 5, right? Like, well, you must make like as much money as him. You make like $100 million too, you know, and you kind of have to be like, no, that dollar. And you didn't want to, it was self-conscious to me at that point. And so what I finally came to is, you know, my value was priceless. Unfortunately, the budget was $12.
I mean, this is a very probably long answer, but why do you think the discrepancy is what it is?
Well, it's a younger sport in the history of sports, right? So it always takes time to get a foundation. But there are still a lot of barriers when it comes to women in contact sports like that. It is an uphill climb. You know, it's only until recently that you saw like MMA accept women. It takes breakout performers to get the conversation started. I had so many people who would say, oh my gosh, Shen, I'm so sorry. I didn't even know women played football. So you can't be sorry for what you don't know. But once you do know, that's when you look at hopefully changing it. And we as a society can do that by continuing to share the stories, to, you know, change the narrative and to increase the opportunities and access, whether it's, you know, girls playing at younger and younger age, or putting women's sports on the same or similar, at least, platforms to men, then you start to increase professionalism and the dollars happen as well.
We're talking with Jen Welter about her book, Play Big, Lessons in Being Limitless from the First Woman to Coach in the NFL. How did you get the job coaching in the league?
The way that I got the job in the NFL was actually a very long road, even though it seems so out of nowhere. I had played women's football for a good long time, and then I actually played a season of football against men in the indoor football league with the Texas Revolution. And what happened when I played on the Revolution is that it was so far out of the box that it really forced us all to come together, right? And we really did become very much a family. So we were very much a family, and a new head coach came in the next year, and I thought I was done, right? I survived playing against guys for a year. I did it. I don't need to test fate again. So he came in, and I just actually was at an event and walked in, and my guys flipped out, and they're, you know, tossing me around because relative to them, I'm a football. And it caught the head coach's attention because he said, who is this girl that all my guys love, right? And somebody told him, they're like, coach, that's your running back. And he was so surprised that the guys and I were so close that it made him curious. So he pulls me over, starts grilling me on football, what's good with the team, what's not, all of these things. And I just told him, you know, to me, it was like, well, I got to look out for these guys. And I told him what was good, what wasn't. And, you know, probably was very opinionated. And he called me the next day and said, you have to coach my football team. And I said, absolutely not. I don't want to coach football. And he said, not a lot of guys are going to give you this opportunity. You're taking this job. And I said, no. And I hung up on him. So he called me back the next day and he told me about myself. He said, you remember how I said not a lot of guys were going to give you this opportunity and you were taking this job? And I said, yep. He said, good. I took it for you. You're coaching for me. And by the way, you can't quit. Otherwise, the narrative surrounding women in men's pro football would be, we had a girl once and she quit.
Hmm.
So I'm coaching in arena football, and, you know, it's a cool experience, very different. But the NFL then announced Sarah Thomas as the first full-time female ref in NFL history. And in response to Sarah's hiring, somebody asked Bruce Arians if he could ever see a female coaching in the NFL. And, you know, one of the things you got to love about Bruce Arians is he will tell you the truth, right? And so Bruce said, the second a woman can make these guys better, she'll be hired. And so I ended up talking to my coaches about it. And, you know, they said, well, we should call Bruce. And I thought they were all crazy. And they asked if I could get his number. And I kind of wondered about it because they had played in the NFL. And obviously I hadn't. But, you know, arena football, we practiced really early in the morning, and I just had way too much time on my hands that day. So I went on the website and looked up the Arizona Cardinals and found a number and called it. And on that day, I wasn't an assistant coach. I was an assistant, and I was calling the Arizona Cardinals on behalf of myself as if I wasn't myself, and worked my way to Bruce's assistant, who was fascinated, and he said, you know, I think Bruce would really want to take that call. And so I gave him the head coach's number. Definitely thought I had gotten blown off, but I was really proud of myself that I called. I felt like I'd kind of cheated the world, right? And I was really proud of myself that I was brave enough to get on the phone. And about 2 weeks later, I walked into practice, and my coach was just elated. And he said, you will never guess who I talked to yesterday, Bruce Arians. And he said, tell me about this girl.
Wow. These things usually break down in kind of predictable ways where there's a lot of noise on the sports shows and on the radio and so on. Some people are supportive, some aren't. At the time you were going through it, did you see yourself as the symbol that you became, or did you try to tune that stuff out?
I did my very best to tune all of that stuff out. I actually, when I got to training camp, you know, you kind of relax into a hotel room, and I went to turn on the TV, and the TV didn't work, and walk over, you know, like most people would do, pick up the phone and go to call the front desk. And then I thought, you know what? That's probably the best thing that could happen to me. I certainly don't need to hear it. So I kept the TV disconnected in my room, and really only heard about some of it when people would tell me, or, you know, the guys would tell me about stuff, or we'd be in a bar. But it really, not like a bar, but like watching football, and it just was when it resonated. But I just figured knowing all of that stuff couldn't really help me. It could only distract me, and what I needed to do was just put my head down and do the best job that I could, because my goal was always to be the first and not the last, meaning I wanted to be successful so that the door remained open for any woman who wanted to coach, not give them a reason to say, well, this is why it can't happen.
How far do you think we are from having a head coach in the NFL who's a woman?
You know, I think that'll be a while only, and not for any reason of like gender bias or any of those things, but because it takes a really long time to get the experience necessary to be a head coach in the NFL, you know, and women are just now getting opportunities to join staffs, and we still need to get more women involved in college. Now, there are some great women who coach in high schools and in women's football as well, but I think it's going to take some time and really being in that system and in that world to not only, you know, have all of the experience, but also to have been around the league enough to know all of the players, because that's a lot of it. And I don't just mean the football players on the field, but I mean, you know, the deal makers and the front offices and all of those interconnected things that happen. So I think that you'll see it in the NBA, you know, with either Nancy Lieberman or a Becky Hammon before you will the NFL, because it just typically is a longer career path.
Well, one of the things you hear when any of these barriers is broken is that, oh, well, you know, the players will tune her out. She won't be able to go into the locker room. They're not going to want to, you know, get yelled at by a woman. But you didn't really find that any of that was true in practice, right?
No, actually, I thought it was a good addition to a great staff, meaning, you know, every coach is just looking at a facet of the game, and hopefully together as a staff, we relate to the players well as a whole, right? A lot of these guys really took to it, you know, and what I figured out, and it really just came from the fact that we became really close, is that, you know, they wanted me to meet their moms. And whether it was a mom or an auntie or a grandma who was that really significant, strong woman in their life, a lot of them came from a single caregiver household, and that was a strong woman. So a good amount of those guys had been being coached by women their whole lives, just maybe not in the NFL. And so I think that you just have to look at it, and you don't want it to be the same, right? I tell people all the time, I was like, you know, I didn't coach the same way as the guys because I'm not the guys. And it's not a value for me to try and outman a man at being a man. Like, what I or any woman brings to a situation should be unique and special. That's why we have diversity, right? Like, I had a doctorate in psychology, so that was something that I could add to the staff that was unique to my background. And so there were areas that I could relate in that. And I think that's where we're a little misguided, is it's like, well, you know, it's him getting coached by a woman as opposed to a man. Well, no, it's being coached by men and women. And, you know, on some things the guys might be better, and then on another, you know, a woman might add some value or be better. So I loved it, and I think the guys would tell you the same thing.
Do you see yourself getting back to the NFL someday? Do you still want to coach there?
I love coaching football, and I coach football all the time. I'm just not coaching in the NFL, so that remains to be seen. I think the hard thing for me is, you know, I loved all the players and coaches in Arizona so much that I have a very hard, like a very high bar that it would be to step back into, but we'll see.
Let me ask you just one more question about what's going on in the NFL right now. It's become the center of American politics the last several weekends with a lot of debate over, you know, kneeling during the national anthem and what that represents. I just wonder what you think of that quote unquote controversy.
Well, here's the problem that we've come to right now, right? We automatically said kneeling during the national anthem, and it's about now we're forcing this divisive nature of either you love your country or you're protesting racial oppression. Well, those aren't either or situations, right? There's nothing about that that says if I'm going to protest, I don't love my country. Now, a lot of that has to do with the manner in which we're protesting right now, which I understand. My dad's a Vietnam veteran. I told you that before. And so do I, like some other people, wish that maybe it was another way? Sure. But here's the problem. When you have the President of the United States saying if somebody protests, they should be fired, then we're changing the whole conversation. We've gotten away from even what the point of this was, because they're not protesting the flag. And so we as a society have to look at these moments, right, in which we're fired up and we're having these conversations, and we need to say, how do we fix it and where do we go from here? Not if you do that, you're fired. Right? Because all that does is make people have to take a stand, right? And it's forcing people who don't want to choose either way to now get involved, because you've insulted people and you've made it very personal. And these protests are not supposed to be personal, right? So I think we have to do what, we have to look at these conversations and change the narrative. Right. Look at some of the teams who didn't even want to come out on the field because they didn't want to have to force their players to be divided and make that choice. Part of what I love about football is that it requires diversity at its core. Right. It doesn't work if everybody looks the same. So why are we then trying to pull teams apart by making them make an impossible choice?
Jen Welter is the author of Play Big, Lessons in Being Limitless from the First Woman to Coach in the NFL. Jen, thank you so much for taking all this time for us. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Absolutely, anytime. Thank you guys so much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.